Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hey, Brewers fans. We know it's a long, cold winter. But let's warm you up with the latest on the crew. It's time for Hot Stove Weekly on Sports Radio 105.7 FM, The Fan.
Back at the wall.
The 2020 championship season cannot get here quick enough. The crew came up short in 2019, and it's time to turn the page and look toward the future. Get the latest free agent signings, trades, the front office, the fans, and more. Heading into our 15th year of Brewers coverage, it's Hot Stove Weekly on The Fan. Here's your host, the franchise, Tim Allen.
Well, it's January, and the calendar has flipped to the 2020 championship season, and we're talking Brewers baseball. Welcome, everybody. It's Hot Stove Weekly. Tim Allen and company, the season is just about upon us. You guys have been knee-deep into Packers football, and I get that. Packers-Seahawks, huge game. That might be an understatement coming up Sunday evening. However, you can get more of that conversation tomorrow morning. Chuck and Bart. Also, Bill Michaels and the Wendy's Big Show have it covered as well. On the show tonight, we'll take our first bounce around the NL Central with Cincinnati Reds from 1530 ESPN. Mo Egger will join us, talk about the Reds making some moves, and they're going to make some noise in the Central, it appears. Also, Chuck Freeman from Chuck and Winkler will join us, Paul Wagner, former Brewers pitcher, and newly acquired, new right-hander Josh Lindblom will join us in just a couple of minutes. But right now, we'll start out with our insider, Adam McKelvey from MLB.com and Brewers.com, as we hit the Great Midwest Bank Hotline. It's 2020, Adam. Happy holidays, and welcome back.
Hey, I'm happy to bat leadoff. It's been quite a while since I was a leadoff hitter.
Yeah, it has been a while. Let me start with this. Talk to Brewer fans about how they should feel a little bit, or at least your perspective on that, about the departed players. We'll just start there. And those of you just tuning into Brewers baseball, putting some focus on, check this out. Chase Anderson, Zach Davies, Yasmani Grandal, Mike Moustakas, Eric Thames, Travis Shaw, Drew Pomerantz, Jordan Lyles, Hernan Perez, Junior Guerra, Jeremy Jeffress, Corey Spangenberg, Tyler Austin, Trent Grisham, Jay Jackson, Gio Gonzalez, Jimmy Nelson, Matt Albers, Tyler Saladino, Yolis Chacin, all no longer members of the Milwaukee Brewers organization. How are Brewer fans going to handle that, Adam?
Yeah, well, I think it depends whether you got a 2020 calendar as a Christmas present. If you got a calendar, you're probably not very happy because, you know, half the months are probably with guys that are gone. It's been a tremendous winter of turnover. I don't think it should be surprising to anyone that there's been turnover, but it's still, I think, is jarring when it happens. And that certainly is reflected in my interactions with fans. There's a lot of angst, I think, about the fact that a team that had some success over the last few years basically has, to some degree, been taken apart. And the list of replacements is actually quite long, thanks to a flurry right before Christmas. But, you know, there's not the level of addition has not blown the average fan away. And I think that's leading to sort of an angsty situation. But, you know, look, I guess the point that I would make is I still think there's moves to be made. And although many of the free agents The big name free agents are off the board. David Stearns has shown an ability to make creative moves that nobody sees coming. I think the trade with the Padres is a great example of that. And I still think he's got some moves up his sleeves. I don't buy that this roster is set. So I guess my big take right now, and it's not a popular one, is I just think it's worth waiting to see what the roster looks like before making a conclusion about what sort of team you think the Brewers are going to be in 2020.
No, I would tend to agree with you. I'm going to lean toward you just a little bit on this one, but is this sort of the MO then for David Stearns? Because and we'd all like a plug-and-play lineup. We'd all like to stack a 1982 California Angels lineup together and Freddie Lynn and Reggie Jackson and just plug and let them play. Is this the new style for David Stearns?
Well, I think that's the new style around baseball, really. You know, the days of being able to go around the diamond and name the player at each position, they're gone. And that's not just for this team. That's not just for lower revenue teams. That's for all teams, championship caliber teams, World Series teams. It's a different model of building clubs, I think, and building roster. And it's based on versatility. It's based on finding the platoon advantage. And that leads to these sort of movable parts all over the diamond, even for really good teams. And that's what David Stearns, it seems to me, has tried to do is, you know, they have limited resources, and he's trying to maximize those resources and give Craig Counsell a winning option at every position for as many of the 162 games as possible. And that means making some moves that are, you know, maybe on paper they don't jump out at you, but if, say, Justin Smoke is a left-handed hitter and Ryan Braun a right-handed hitter pair up at first base, I mean, that gives Craig Counsell a pretty good option to exploit the platoon advantage every day. And that's what they're going for at a lot of different positions, where it's going to be maybe more of a mix and a match, plus Yelich and Kane. I think that's the way they're sort of looking at building this thing. And they've had some success doing that before. You know, look, first base is a good example, I think, with Aguilar and Thames. I think catcher was a good example pre-Yasmani Grandal, mm-hmm. where they had Pena and Eric Kratz who had their moments. They've done a decent job at taking sort of not your all-star type player, but using them in a way that gets production. And that is what they're going for at a bunch of these positions. And it creates a lot of uncertainty where you can't look at all around the diamond and say they're going to be great at third base. They're going to be great at catcher. There's a lot of positions where we just don't know how it's going to depend on the performance of the players and whether these platoon matchups actually work.
I equated a little bit to a style of, as you said, it's around baseball, but I think the Rays have really had success doing it this way, where you bring in an Eric Sogard for a year, and then he leaves, and you bring in a whoever it might be, Mark Mathias in this case. One more thing on the mass exodus, Adam McKelvey, was there a player that surprised you that they didn't work out a deal with?
Yeah, Eric Thames for sure. I mean, I thought that option was a no-brainer. And I think that was the signal, if anything, was a signal of that they were trying to squeeze every bit of value out of every single dollar of payroll. That was the move that showed that's sort of their MO going into this offseason. They did it on the pitching side, too. I mean, I don't know that it was 100% for Chase Anderson. I thought it was Zach Davies would be on this team for the coming season. And those trades were also examples of, you know, those are productive players when they were on the mound for the Brewers, but they felt like they could, you know, divert a million or so here, a million or so there to help them fill out the roster in other areas. So, you know, they are like squeezing those rags to get every last drop of value out. And it's led to some moves that I think were surprising. But to me, Eric Thames is kind of been the most surprising of those moves. And he ends up getting, you know, look, if he produces, Washington got pretty good value in that contract for $3-4 million.
Yeah, and whenever we talk money and the payroll's sitting at, what, 80 or 90 million now?
Yeah.
It tends to ruffle some feathers in Brewer Nation.
I think that's the story of this offseason, is there is a greater focus, at least than I've noticed before, on what the payroll number is. And it seems to me like there is almost more interest in the payroll total than in the individual moves that make up that payroll total. And I just think that's a mistake to have that debate now. If they go in, I wrote this in answering some fan questions the other day. If they cut a third off the payroll, which is sort of where they're at right now, 25-30%. If they cut 30% payroll by 30% coming off back-to-back postseason appearances with no warning to the fans that that was the plan, that is definitely worth debating. And that is definitely worth, in some corners of the fan base, getting upset about. I just think that we're having the debate a little too early, and I think it's worth just hanging out until we have the information at hand before we have that debate. So that to me is one of the more interesting things. There is a great focus on the payroll total and maybe less almost in discussing, look, how's Justin Smoke going to work out? What is Omar Narvaez's ceiling? Was it a mistake? You know, what went into parting with Trent Grisham at this stage of his career? It's like, the people are much more focused on what's the payroll going to be. And look, if it comes down to it and the payroll is 85-90 on opening day, that's certainly a debate we should have, whether that's the right thing to do by fans.
Final thing for you, Adam McAlvey, Brewers.com, MLB.com. Josh Lindblom going to join us in just a couple of minutes here. You alluded to it just a second there, but will they make a move? Could you make the argument, and you say it's early, could you make the argument that they're leaving that financial flexibility for a potential trade? We know they're not going to sign the $200 million player. We understand that. But
well, those guys are gone too, yeah.
True. And so does it leave flexibility to open up payroll or keep payroll open for a potential trade?
It certainly looks like there is the flexibility to do that right now. You know, even if payroll comes down from last year where they set a record with the Moustakas signing on top of the Grandal signing, there is still room to add significant payroll. If the number right now is 85-90, you know, and you go to 110, which is down from what it was at the start of last year, that means you've got like 20 million plus still to work with. So that's what leads me to believe that there is still something cooking this winter, that David Stearns is still going to make additions because, again, if they were going to cut the payroll by as significant an amount as it stands right now, I think that would require a little bit of advance warning to the fans who are putting down money for season ticket packages, et cetera. And we have not heard any of that advance warning. So as David Stearns has said at various points in this offseason, financial flexibility is not a bad thing, and it puts the Brewers, despite having overall some, you know, payroll limitations, in a position to spend should opportunity present itself. And there still is time for opportunity. I mean, I think back to the Yelich trade. That was late January, so we're still well shy of that. And there's still, I think, it are going to be significant moves around baseball as teams finalize their rosters going into 2020. And the Brewers have some needs still. Third base stands out. I don't think the third opening day third baseman is on the roster at this particular point in time. And I think there still is certainly room to add on the pitching front.
Well, this organization has made a lot of splashes right before the On Deck event,
sure,
which is coming up in just a couple of weeks. So I'm crossing my fingers that they, in effect, improve their team. And we don't know. As you said, they may be improved. Adam, we got to turn you loose. Josh Lindblom is going to join us here in a minute or two. 2020 is here. The championship season is upon us. And I look forward to doing some more work with you this year, Adam.
Yep, sounds good, Tim. You're going to like Josh Lindblom. He's great.
Nice. All right, there he goes, Adam McAlvey on the Great Midwest Bank Hotline. And yes, Josh Lindblom, the KBO, Korean Baseball Organization MVP, is now a Brewer. And we're going to ask him, why Milwaukee? And we'll hear from Josh next here in Hot Stove Weekly on The Fan. Welcome back. We're talking Brewers baseball. The 2020 championship season is upon us. I can't wait to get going. 15th season of postgame coverage. And we've been through some tough times here as Brewers fans. We've been through some pretty celebratory times, too, as of late. If you think back to 2008 when the Brewers cracked the seal on a 26-year playoff drought, yeah, you got eight. You got 2011. You go back to the last few years, 17, just a game back at the end of the year, and then cracking through to the playoffs and a deep run in 18 and a playoff appearance last year in 19. And now some roster shuffling is what's happening. And we just talked to Adam McAlvey. Josh Lindblom will join us here in just a second. But some roster turnover, unlike we've seen in a long time, guys. And we're going to talk to Paul Wagner. He has seen some roster turnover in his career. And so we'll get his thoughts on that in just a few minutes as well. Chuck Freeman from Chuck and Winkler will join us. Also, Mo Egger, ESPN 1530 in Cincinnati will join us. And the Cincinnati Reds, wow. They're making some moves, some signings. In fact, Mike Moustakas down there. And, boy, that's going to be a tough out for the Brewers. I will say that. But we went over the mass exodus of players. The acquisitions, just to catch you up on this, guys. Catcher Omar Nevarez, he's going to be behind the dish. I would think roughly 130-plus games. So get used to that name. Luis Urias, acquired in a trade with San Diego, is now going to play shortstop and maybe a little bit of second and third, depending. You also have Eric Lauer, a left-hander that's going to be in the rotation, along with another lefty veteran, Brett Anderson. These are all Brewers that you're going to come to know the names of throughout the season this year. Justin Smoke, a 10-year veteran, going to be at first base. Eric Sogard is back as a Brewer, and that's an interesting story, and we're going to try and talk to Eric Sogard in the next couple of weeks here. If not, we'll touch base with him at the On Deck event in just a few weeks. But, you know, he had the nice year in 2018, and I'm sorry, 2017 and 2018 just didn't go right for him. He got off to a horrible start, hitting .134 through the first third of the season, and the Brewers had to cut him at that point in July of that year. Bounces back with both Toronto and the Tampa Rays, and just has an outstanding run. About 100 games, hits about .290, comes up with some pop, 13 homers, 40 knocked in. Eric Sogard admittedly, and here's why it's an interesting story, not just the bounce back for Eric Sogard, but it's interesting because he admitted that there were some off-the-field family issues that were going on. And I'm interested in having a nice chat with Eric Sogard about that. Ronnie Rodriguez, will he make the roster? Utility man taking over for Hernan Perez, who has exited. Angel Perdomo out of that bullpen. Ryan Healy, a corner infielder. Mark Mathias, a utility infielder. A guy that you're really going to like, Avisail Garcia, to play some outfield. And this is an interesting scenario for the Brewers here this year. With Garcia, I mean, obviously he wants to play every day. He's an outfielder. So does that mean you're going to go away from Yelich? No. You go away from Kane? Uh-uh. Braun? So they admit that Braun's going to play some first base, but not going to be the first baseman. All right, fair enough. Then Braun's now literally a platoon player and probably, I don't know this for sure, but and you never know how things happen, but probably will play the fewest games without an injury in his career in the big leagues. I would suspect in some way, shape, or form, the games played, a little different than games started, but the games played, I'd be surprised if those games played went over 120. I'd be surprised. Probably going to be the 110 mark, just over 100 maybe. I mean, never know, but Avisail Garcia is going to want his playing time, and rightly so. He put up some good numbers last year. J.P. Feireisen could be out of that bullpen. I mean, these are players that you're going to come to know, and you're going to be it's going to be a beautiful June night at Miller Park. Roof's going to be open, and these are the players that are going to step to the plate or be on that mound. Brett Anderson, Eric Lauer, Josh Lindblom. I mean, obviously, Brandon Woodruff is going to be on the mound. I mean, this could be interesting. Really, really interesting. We'll get in touch with Josh Lindblom in just a couple of minutes. If you want to join us here, 414-799-1250. Has there been a little too much turnover? And this is what I've been talking about and thinking about the last week or so in preparing for this show. And it was, is there a little too much? And I mentioned that to Adam McKelvey, and he said that that's just the way of baseball these days. I don't know. Out of the roster in the wild card playoff game, 14 players have left the organization. I mean, that is a huge number, guys. So is this David Stearns doing the piecemeal, and are we going to go through this on a semi-regular basis until they find the Keston heroes to just plug and play? That's possible. But for now, this is what we've got to deal with in 2020. He's ready to go? Let's hit that great Midwest Bank hotline and welcome in new Brewers right-hander Josh Lindblom. Josh, my name is Tim. Nice to meet you. Welcome to Milwaukee.
Thank you. I thought it was my welcome to the Brewers moment. The line was busy. I thought you were playing a joke on me.
No, not at all. That'll come soon, trust me.
All right, okay, good.
Yeah, we'll get you on that. Hey, why Milwaukee? I mean, you obviously had some choices here, and why the Brewers?
You know, I think just in meeting with David and the rest of the front office, seeing what this organization has done the last couple of years, you know, from that standpoint, it was a good fit. And then also, I think from a personal standpoint, guys come here and they get better. You look at some of the acquisitions that they've made over the last couple of years, the guys they've traded for, signed, and, you know, that the other teams might have written off, and they've come to Milwaukee and they've gotten better, and I'm excited about that for myself.
Has this path for you, Josh, over the years, you look back on when you were drafted, Purdue, and you know, you got these dreams of being a big leaguer, and you ultimately are, and were at that point. But then you go to Korea, and you play in the KBO, and you have tremendous success. Did you ever envision that would be your path, looking back on it?
Definitely not. The career trajectory was definitely not linear. I took a roundabout way to getting back to the big leagues, but you know, looking back on it, I don't think that I would have changed anything about it. You know, I got called up when I was young, had some success, had some failure, had to kind of search for who I was, the pitcher, and that search led me to Asia. I think I found out who I am as a pitcher. Pretty sure I have, but there's still room to grow and there's still room to get better. And you know, I just really can't be more excited about what's ahead.
Yeah, and you have pitched. I did a little studying on you here. You have pitched at Miller Park, although 3.2 innings, 4 earnings, that wasn't good. However, I did look at your dome numbers. You do pitch well in a dome. Did you know that?
I did not know. I do remember I gave up a home run to Corey Hart in Milwaukee when I was with Philadelphia. Corey Hart actually, fun fact, was my least favorite hitter to face in all of Major League Baseball. So I do remember, if you go look that up, he hit a home run off me. It was late in the game, and I think the Brewers took the lead on it.
Did he go oppo on you? Big, long, lanky?
Yep, it was oppo. But I did not know that I had good numbers in a dome. I did not know that.
Yeah, despite Miller Park struggling just, I think it was just the one or two appearances. But, yeah, in a dome, it looks good. And now the numbers, here's what we're gravitating toward. How do we translate some incredible numbers just to catch people up? We're a little used to Eric Thames coming over as the KBO MVP. That's what you were last year, and your numbers were outstanding. Just a 2.5 ERA, and just you were an Iron Man. You made your starts and everything. How do we equate the translation over to the big leagues now that you've had tremendous success there?
You know, I don't know. You know, I think you look at guys that have come over from Asia. You look at Miles Michaelis. You look at Merrill Kelly, probably a little bit better comp to me. I'm not sure. That's something that we're going to have to find out, I guess. But, you know, I'm ready for the challenge. I'm excited for the challenge. It's going to be a fun ride. The one thing that I've learned, you know, in my career is that there's going to be ups and downs. And you know, you look at the last 2 years that I had and they were great, but you know, you rewind to 2016 in the KBO and I was horrible. So, I mean, you put your nose at the grindstone and you just try to get better each and every day.
I don't know how you guys do it. Josh Lindblom, our guest here on Hot Stove Weekly. I don't know. In 15 years of doing post game coverage here in Milwaukee, Josh, it never ceases to amaze me. I'm so impressed with you guys that can lock out the failure. And I couldn't do it. It's not in me. But you guys do such a great job of, you know, you're going to have some failures, but you're going to hopefully have more success than that.
Yeah, I think, you know, one of the things, you know, I've been lucky. This will be my 13th season in professional baseball. And you know, one of the things that I've learned over the course of my career is that there's really a narrow definition of, in sports in general, is that, you know, failure, you know, wins and losses, it's not like a binary. It's not ones and zeros and X's and O's. And the thing that I've learned is that the only time that we really fail in sports and life is if we fail to prepare and we fail to learn. It's, you know, it's part of the game. It's a part of life. But as long as you learn from it and you move forward and you put the effort in to try to get better, I don't even really like saying the word failure because I don't know if I don't necessarily believe in it, but that's just a perspective thing, I think, of playing for so long and seeing the way that baseball is. So that's kind of my philosophical take, I guess, for the night.
No. It makes sense. Most of us radio guys would be like Trevor Bauer. And we get pissed and we just chuck it into the center field stands. That's what we do.
I've been there.
Have you ever gone off like that?
I've never thrown a ball over the center field fence, but I have taken my anger and aggression out on some trash cans before.
Okay.
But that's about the extent of it.
You mentioned Josh that you had heard that players get better here in Milwaukee, and I've always thought I'm a big fan of Craig Counsell's because I think the mark of a good leader is making what you have better the longer you have it, and he definitely is that guy and has that philosophy.
Yeah.
Have you talked to him at all yet?
I have. Yes, I've talked with Craig. Talked with Chris Hook, pitching coach. And it seems, you know, organizationally, the one word that kept coming up was optimization. Taking what you have and optimizing those traits. So, you know, taking your strengths and optimizing them. And I think, you know, the way that they approach development, the way that they approach the game is that they see things that guys can do really, really well, and then they make those better. So it's been fun to talk and see the plans that the team has, see the plans that the coaching staff has for me and, you know, just kind of, you know, I guess for the team in general.
On a personal note, you're a family guy, and I can say this from being in this area and talking to a lot of, you know, current and former Brewers, that it is a cool place to raise your kids, and it's a great place in the summertime. The fan base is tremendous. It's pretty incredible. Has anybody reached out to you to let you know that?
Yeah, there's been quite a few guys over the course of my playing career that, you know, I've had the opportunity to play against or play with one of my best friends in baseball, AJ Ellis, played for the Dodgers, Marlins, Phillies, lives in Milwaukee, and he was one of the first people to reach out to me. Other players have said that, you know, if there was one place they could play as a home player, it'd be Milwaukee. And in just my experience there as a visiting player, you know, not too many times, but I always loved Miller Park. I love the atmosphere. I thought it was one of the neatest venues in all of Major League Baseball. So my family's excited. We were pulling up to the stadium for the first time, and my son's 5 years old, Palmer, and he says, "Daddy, is that's where the Milwaukee Brewers play?" He was amazed at how big the stadium was, and so it's cool as a dad, like you said, to get to see the game through his eyes now and my other kids' eyes.
Super family friendly organization. I can attest to that. There's no question. So you mentioned AJ Ellis. I got a little bone to pick with him. I have yet to talk to him about this, but I was at Maryvale a few years ago, and he had a foul ball that we weren't paying attention and got me in the forehead.
Oh,
yeah. That's fun.
All right, I'll let him know. We'll have to set something up. Maybe we can set something up before a game someday.
He can autograph the ball right next to the blood that's on it.
You still have the ball. Yeah, we can do that.
Yeah, I wasn't throwing that back down. No.
All right.
Normally
we can get that arranged for sure.
That's right. Just one more thing here. What do you do away from baseball? I know you're a family man, but any hobbies that we should be aware of? You play guitar, piano. What do you do?
I was doing some research on you as well, and it says you're an avid reader. 1 to 2 books a week?
I do. I read a lot of fiction stuff,
wow,
though.
So I enjoy reading in my free time and then for school as well. I have a lot of reading I've got to do for school. But I enjoy reading, so I'm going to need to get some new books from you. Some fiction books. Actually, I just finished a really good book on Mr. Rogers.
Okay.
He's a fascinating man.
Yeah.
That was my first book of the year.
I'm reading a Thomas Perry book right now. I'm into the Stephen. I got the latest Stephen King book called The Institute. That's in reserve. I'm flying to Vegas, so I'm saving that for the flight.
All right. I read that about you as well. So we're gonna have a lot to talk about. I like to do my scouting report on people before I talk to them. Not go in blind.
Okay. All right, Josh, I appreciate it, man. We'll see you at the On Deck event. You'll be there, right?
Yes, I will be there.
Awesome. I appreciate the conversation. Look forward to many more, okay?
Yep, for sure. Nice to meet you and talk with you.
All right, there he is, Josh Lindblom, newly acquired right-hander, that joined us here on the Great Midwest Bank Hotline. That's good stuff right there. We'll take a break. Paul Wagner will join us on that same Great Midwest Bank Hotline as Hot Stove Weekly continues here. Tim Allen talking Brewers baseball here on The Fan. Welcome back, talking Brewers baseball. I know it's Packer, well, heaven around here, right? As you've got the Packers and Seahawks going at it on Sunday, full coverage all week long. Conversation continues about the Packers-Seahawks divisional round playoff matchup coming up tomorrow morning. Chuck and Winkler, Bill Michaels been covering all of this, as well as the Wendy's Big Show and a lot of additional programming. Keep your ears tuned to The Fan here, AM 1250, 105.7 FM. Great Midwest Bank Hotline is where we find Paul Wagner, a former Brewers pitcher, and my good friend, Paulie. Happy holidays. I hope you had a good one, okay?
Happy New Year. I hope you had a Merry Christmas as well.
We tried. I will say this, talking to Adam McKelvey last hour, guys like Josh Lindblom and Brett Anderson and Eric Lauer and Justin Smoke and Avisail Garcia and Omar Navarro. Are you nervous about what's going on here in 2020?
We talked about this on the very first hot stove of the season. I am. I'm very nervous. I think we need more pieces. I think we need more bats. I think we need new arms. We need more, I should say. I think we need somebody at the hot corner. I understand how we're doing it. I just don't see what's happening. We just talked about the double-edged sword with Eric Thames. Eric Thames signs for a cost that we saw with Washington. We get Justin Smoke. Good thing is, you know what you're getting from Eric Thames. You don't know what you're getting Justin Smoke, but you know what? We get a little defense. We got a glove there now. Now I think this team just has to fill that third base hole. And we were just talking earlier, I was on the phone before I got on with you, the fact that we made an effort for Starlin Castro before he signed with the Nationals, and yeah, he chose not to play third base. So, you know what? At least I know we're all on the right page and we're trying to get this to work. But those guys get paid the big bucks, and you don't become executive of the year for, you know, listening to Paul Wagner. That's for damn sure.
No, it's weird because you go from Mike Moustakas's and Yasmani Grandal's and some of these names, and then you go to these guys, and no disrespect to these guys. Right. It's not the splash. I just wonder if this is kind of the new wave for David Stearns. Some people say it's a new wave in baseball is to have all these interchangeable parts. It's like a bullpen every year. You know, they just turn over and turn over and turn over. I don't know if Brewer fans are going to like that. I'm not sure yet. We're going to have to find out.
Oh, yeah. And I'm not saying it's not going to work. By no means. I don't mean to come across that way. But it's just when you've experienced two consecutive playoff years, excitement, and you want that next step, the big, like you said, the flashing lights, the bright light name isn't coming here. You know what? The Moustakas isn't re-signed. The Grandal is not re-signed. The guys that have replaced are great players. The guy in Seattle, our catcher, he's going to hit a lot of bombs. He's going to jump that bridge many times in right field this year, and he's going to make Milwaukee fans happy. But you know what? We just got a couple pieces that we got to kind of grow into, and we got to start to love again, because there is a lot of different names like we talked about. What, 10 guys from the original 25-man roster last year?
Yeah, it's been a mass exodus. It really has been. And, you know, sometimes it's beyond your control here. I mean, you can't pay everybody an exorbitant amount of money, and I understand that. But let's not forget, though, the outfield of Avisail Garcia and Kane, and obviously the MVP Yelich and Braun to a degree, Ben Gamel's out there. I mean, there are foundational parts here. Keston Hira is the one. To me, if you were to ask me, what am I looking forward to most of the 2020 championship season, it's 550 at-bats out of Keston Hira in 1 year.
I would agree with you. I would agree with you. But as you just rattled off all those names, besides Garcia that we signed, this was the same exact core that was coming back in 19. And when that core was coming back last year in 19, what did the Milwaukee Brewers and David Stearns do? They went out and got Grandal behind the plate, and they re-signed Moustakas again at third. So you're right. That core is good. That's a phenomenal outfield. I mean, I love it. I don't think it's going to produce home runs like the Yankee outfield, but you know what? It's going to be a good one. It's going to be a damn good outfield. And you're right. If Hira gives me 550 plate appearances and he hits the way he's capable of hitting, because he is definitely an elite plus major league hitter with power to the gaps, I love it. Now we just got to fill in those spots, and I think that's one wish list that we hope that nothing goes wrong, knock on wood.
Well, it's not only a fascinating look-see at Keston Hira's young career here for his first full season, but it's also the progression he makes defensively, because that is a concern. And I don't know if that had anything to do with Carlos Subero exiting or not, but Keston Hira definitely needs to be better defensively.
Yeah, absolutely. And we've known that. We've known that from the day we drafted him. We've known he's had some defensive deficiencies, and that was there. Nobody ever questioned his ability to hit the ball at any level as he threw through the system. We know he can hit the ball. But you're right. As he maintains, even if he does not degress, at least he gets a little bit better, a little bit stronger. If he can maintain or get just a tad bit better, we know what we got in his offensive production. At times can overshadow that defensive, especially later in the game when you have the option, as Craig will have, to make a defensive replacement.
We mentioned this last month. Again, we're talking with Paul Wagner, former Brewers pitcher, here on Hot Stove Weekly. We mentioned this about a month ago, but it bears repeating, and that is the Josh Hader effect here, not only in baseball, but certainly for the Brewers here. That guy that controls 70, 80 games a year, and a guy that just controls the tempo. It's a lockdown guy. With what's going on with turnover on the roster, what do you think Brewer fans would do if Josh Hader was moved in a trade?
Like you said, we talked about it. I, being a pitcher, I know, I realize the value of somebody that can shut it down. We are not going to go back to 2018 when J.J. Knable and Josh Hader, we can't go back there because the pieces are a little bit different. Some are gone. Some are coming back off an injury. But that is where you would like to be. When you establish that you want your starting pitchers to get you maybe, let's just say, 15 outs, 16 outs, you have to have that bullpen like we had in 18. So if we can keep Josh Hader, I know he can bring back a lot of valuable pieces. He could probably solve our third base issue. He could solve another issue, maybe another arm in the pen, not as dominating as him. But it's really nice to know when you look at Bobby Wall coming out of spring training, Corey Knable going to be healthy, hopefully by May, and Hader back in his two-inning role back-to-back or however he can do it. We maybe can have a formidable bullpen at the back end like we did in 18 with power arms and everybody else that we have there. So that's a good thing. That's why I want to hang on to Josh Hader.
I was watching MLB Network last night, and they were having a conversation. Plesak was involved in it. They were having a conversation about their expectations of comeback player of the year, and it was regarding pitchers. And they went through the list, and it was Craig Kimbrell, and I think they all gravitated toward him, and he's going to be the comeback player of the year. And, you know, he didn't have spring training, and nobody signed him for half the season. Not one single mention of a dude that saved 39 games for the Brewers a year ago removed, had Tommy John, you mentioned him, Corey Knable. Absolutely no respect.
Yeah, well, you know what it is. It's like you got to go out there. Once you go under the knife, everybody responds differently. Tommy John, though, has had such a great success rate with everybody having it, from starting pitchers to relievers to lefties to righties. Hell, I had the surgery. You can come back from it, but until you see it, you are right. A 39-save guy like Corey can come back and shut the door down in the ninth inning, and he's capable of doing it again as long as he's healthy. And to not mention him, I didn't hear that. But, heck, yeah, he has a great chance of being that guy.
That's the thing. I just try and defend my Brewers when I can. And it's like, I was thinking, honorable mention. Another guy to keep an eye on is Corey Knable, because he had, before the injury they didn't mention him.
And we bring up our Brewers. What about, we got a guy that had a great 18. Last year he struggled, was demoted, couldn't get out of maybe April. And if Burns can put it back together again, mm-hmm. This is a guy who's got legitimate top of the rotation stuff. You can put him back if somehow he can find it both physically and mentally. That's a whole new product there as well.
What happens with a pitcher like that, Paulie, when, it's just not going? We all have bad days. We all have bad runs at whatever we do for a living. Trust me, I know that. When it is going bad for a pitcher, you've been there, you've had some success, and you've had some struggles here and there. I won't quote your ERA today. But what goes on? What happened? In other words, what happened to Corbin Burns?
Him, I can't tell you. Me, I went home every night and prayed and crossed my fingers when I woke up in the morning that it would change. I mean, sometimes when that ball starts rolling or that rock goes down the hill, once it gets to a certain point, it just somehow mentally affects you, and you can't stop that thing. It just continues. Let it roll out and let the season end. Try to stay above water and try to come back. You've got to be so mentally strong to be able to eliminate it. You can talk as an armchair quarterback, and you can say this guy stinks because he gave up 17 or he gave up 12 home runs in his first five. You know what? We can all say that as armchair quarterbacks, but once you cross those white lines and that those lights are so bright, the grass is greener, the fans are louder, you're a human being, man. It's a tough call, and how he can overcome that mentally is the biggest thing that we've got to worry about with him. His physical abilities are there. He's phenomenal. He's got great stuff. We've seen it. We've heard other people talk about it. Somehow he's got to get over that mental hurdle. And if he does, and I hope he does, look out. I mean, now you put him at the top of the rotation with a Brandon Woodruff. Now you've got two legitimate aces. We always talk about the Milwaukee Brewers having threes, fours, and fives in their rotations. You put those two guys up, now we got ones and twos.
Yeah, the career path for him going back to 18, I mean, he was amazing out of the bullpen. Absolutely amazing. You, what, 25-odd appearances down the stretch there with like a 2-1 ERA. It's just a shame to see a guy struggle like that.
It is. It is. It is. You got to feel for him to an extent, and now he's got to, you know, it's just up to him. He's got to look himself in the mirror every morning, and he's got to figure it out. He's got to figure it out himself. He's got all the physical abilities, like I said, but he's just got to figure himself out because he can be a dominant pitcher in this league for years.
So here's what I see happening, and I think Avisail Garcia is going to get the lion's share of playing time in left field. Justin Smoak and Ryan Braun, you can do a lot worse than a first base platoon than that. Brawny and Garcia in the lineup against lefties, and we saw what happens when the Brewers face some lefties over the last couple of years. They're kind of neutralized, mainly in Chicago, and you know, hopefully that's going to turn. 22 home runs from Justin Smoak last year, 19 from the left side. So when a right-hander's on the hill, I think it's Smoak, and when a lefty's out there, it's Braun at first base. Will that work in your mind?
Yeah, and I do. I think that can work, and the reason being behind that is sometimes you always worry about how many games, how many innings can Ryan Braun give us at his age right now in the stage of his career. Luckily, we have the reverse. We have our lefty, our younger left-hander, facing right-handed pitchers where we see what Major League Baseball has, what, 80, 81% of the starters are right-handed. So I'm not saying that we keep Ryan Braun's bat out of lineup all the time, but what we do is we keep him healthy. We keep him off the shelf, per se, and he's healthy enough. So if he's going to face my lefties, give him the smaller amount of at-bats. Maybe he gets 30% of the at-bats and Smoak gets the 70. Ryan Braun can be effective, and Ryan Braun can do well for this team, especially in that platoon situation.
Yeah, and that's going to be tough for me to handle when Brawny gets on a roll, because he's been sort of a guy that can carry a team through a series or for a week and a half or 10 days or so. And when he's rolling like that, the argument's going to be, well, we need to keep him in a position to succeed. And that means even when he's hot, we got to stay the course. That's going to be tough for me to handle. It's going to be the rubber match of a Cubs series, and Brawny's going to be on a torrid streak, and he's going to be riding pine.
And the situation's going to come, he's going to come up against a hard right-hander. The right-hander's going to hang that slider. Brawny's going to stay back, and he's going to drive it in the Toyota Tundra, and you'll be like, oh, man, I can't take him out of the lineup.
Exactly.
What are you going to do? So you're exactly right, 100% with him.
Orlando Arcia, just a couple of more things here, Paul. Orlando Arcia, still young. I know they bring in Urias to kind of, you know, provide some competition, if not a little bit more. Do you see Orlando Arcia's future as bright or not here in Milwaukee?
It's a tough call. I'm very glad that he signed below the projected number that he was supposed to get to give himself the opportunity to play again. I played with some great shortstops back in the old days. I played with the Jay Bells, a Gold Glover, Omar Vizquel's. I played with the Ray Ordonez in New York. And you know what? I played with some pretty good shortstops. Orlando Arcia, yes, can be sometimes a little lackadaisical, but he's got a very good – I like him. If you could have kept like last year's – the way they projected last year with the offensive production coming from Moose, Grandal, Yelich, Kane, that way they could – maybe give up a little bit on the offensive side with Orlando. Now we're going to try to press him again. You do remember we were going to send Orlando down when Dubon was going to come up. Dubon then ended up tearing his Achilles, mm-hmm. and Orlando came back, and he played right away, kind of fell into the same bad habits as he did. Maybe he didn't learn necessarily what he needed to learn, but I like him. I hope we don't give up on him. I still like him as a defender. His offense needs work. He's got to become an offensive player, especially in this day and age with the game. He's got to drive runs, and he's got to hit. He's got to get on base. He's got to do things offensively. But defensively, I think he's got a great glove.
Yeah, that's got to be a great feeling, playing, you know, pitching in front of some of those guys. You give up a sharp ground ball or maybe a screamer up the middle, and you're like, ah, man, another base hit, and then someone flags it down. That's becoming more and more important in baseball as a defensive run saved.
Right, it is. It's a statistic that now has become usable and brought by agents and representation into arbitration meetings, into negotiations and stuff like that. So all aspects of the game are important. Where you value them as a team and how much you value that comes down to the team and the 24 or 25 or the 26 guys now that you have around that individual when you form your team and see what you need and what is important. Is defensive important? Now with the loss of some offensive weapons, maybe offense becomes more important.
Will we see you at the On Deck event? I'm sure we will, right?
I will be at On Deck. Yes, I will. So when you see that small line, jump in it, please, because it's probably going to be me. And I don't want to be by myself again.
Who are you, number 46, right?
Number 46. The good thing is when we do the alumni rotation, they go alphabetical order, which means everybody, pretty much 99% of the people that come to that On Deck are looking for Robin Yount. If you really look at that alphabetical, it goes blah, blah, Gorman Thomas, Paul Wagner, Robin Yount. You have to see me. You can't avoid me because you want Robin's autograph.
There you go. The kid will get home and show his buddies, like, man, I got Gorman Thomas. I got Robin Yount. Who's this Paul Wagner?
Who's this guy? He made me take a picture of him.
No, it reminds me. I've told the story before, Paulie, that as a kid, got Yount, Molitor, and Gantner on a ball. American League Baseball, the real true deal.
Yeah.
And there's one more autograph. There's a fourth autograph on that baseball. For whatever reason, I handed it into the Minnesota Twins bus after the game. And just, hey, can you pass this around? Give me Daryl Jackson.
Oh, really, DJ?
Daryl Jackson is on the autographed ball of the three iconic members of the Brewers legend staff. You know? What are you going to do?
That's the one time you turn around and kick yourself square.
Yeah, it's in a box in the basement now. Normally, it would have been on display in a ball holder, in a case. But no, Daryl Jackson.
Go fetch, Fido.
Yeah, it could have been one of the dog's play toy. Paulie, appreciate it. We'll talk to you soon, okay?
Awesome. Thanks, Timmy. Talk to you soon.
You got it. Paul Wagner has pitched with the Brewers for a few years, also been around the league, Pittsburgh. Was with the Mets, was one out away from a no-hitter. You guys know all about that if you're a longtime listener of the Fan here. He joined us right here on Hot Stove Weekly on the Great Midwest Bank Hotline.
Looking to buy, build, renovate, or refinance in 2020? Look no further and call Great Midwest Bank today. Great Midwest Bank, providing simply local, common-sense lending to your community since 1935.
Pittsburgh Pirates, speaking of which, are in maybe a little bit of a transition period. Some would say that the Chicago Cubs are the team to beat in the Central. Others would say, well, the Brewers are always there, and they've been there for the last handful of years. And there's more that would say the Cincinnati Reds are making a push. Next hour, we're going to talk to Mo Egger, covers the Reds for ESPN 1530, so stick around for that. But if you wanted to jump in here, we got Chuck Freeman coming up as well. If you want to jump in here, 414-799-1250, I will give you this to ponder. One of the biggest things, if not the biggest thing I'm looking forward to this year, is seeing just how damn good Keston Hira is at that plate. Through 500-plus at-bats. Now, his defense, yeah, we could discuss that too. But just offensively, that kid shows no fear at the plate. There is zero fear. It doesn't matter who he's facing. That's the one thing that I think more than anything else. I'm looking forward to a lot of things, one of which is getting back and talking Brewers baseball with you guys every night. But that is probably at the top of the list, seeing Keston Hira. How about you guys? 414-799-1250. A lot of new names. A lot of names exited, a lot of new names added. We're talking Brewers baseball this and every week. It's Hot Stove Weekly here on The Fan.
Hey, Brewers fans, we know it's a long, cold winter. But let's warm you up with the latest on the crew. It's time for Hot Stove Weekly on Sports Radio 105.7 FM, The Fan.
Back at the wall.
The 2020 championship season cannot get here quick enough. The crew came up short in 2019, and it's time to turn the page and look toward the future. Get the latest free agent signings, trades, the front office, the fans, and more. Heading into our 15th year of Brewers coverage, it's Hot Stove Weekly on The Fan. Here's your host, the franchise, Tim Allen.
If you'd have said I would make it 15 years at this job, I'd have said you're nuts. I would have taken three. Welcome back. It's Hot Stove Weekly, your off-season fix of Brewers baseball conversation. More Packers and Seahawks conversation tomorrow morning with Chuck and Winkler. Speaking of which, Chuck Freeman will join us in about a half hour. I love talking Brewers baseball with Freeman. I do. He goes back a ways. He's been through the aches and pains of being a Brewer fan, but as of late, not too bad. I mean, yeah, we would love to see the World Series, obviously, and get a ring, and I think that's coming under David Stearns and Craig Counsell. It didn't take long for me to detect that it's a really good combination, and they, in a very short amount of time, guys, you gotta go back to 2015 when this thing all started. I mean, a lot of people said that this would be the year. 19 or 20 would be, you know, the window of time where we see the fruits of labor going on through 15, 16, 17, and 18. And then it'd be just wait for the 2019 championship season or the 2020 championship season. They'll rebuild it from the ground up, and it's going to be painful at times, and Brewers fans are going to have to understand that. It didn't happen that way. And it gave you the indication then right away, did it not? I know we can be critical at times. I get it. That's part of being a fan and being upset. But, man, it's legit. It is. And I think it's going to happen because it's on the trajectory to happen. And we'll continue to have conversations throughout this offseason each and every Tuesday night at 6. It's a fix of Brewers baseball conversation right in the midst of a Packer run. 13-win team, divisional home playoff game, etc. Bucks, tough one last night, but one of, if not the best team in the NBA. Life is good here for the sports world in Wisconsin. So you have these new names coming in, and there's no indication that we shouldn't trust David Stearns, president and GM. There's really no indication of that. They're an eyelash away from the World Series in 2018, 2019, after Christian Yelich thought it was the death blow for the Brewers, and they just get on this torrid run, and again, you saw it in 17, you saw it in 18, you saw it last year. Late season surges by this organization is just such a good trait to have, guys. It is. It's for any team in any sport. But to know that you can almost count on that, you know, keep pushing mantra and finish strong, strong to the finish type of thing, that's one of the indicators for me that we'll see some high-grade success for this Brewers franchise. Now, again, on paper, it may make you question things a little bit. And I'm going to, again, default to the trust I have with David Stearns. And I will do that until proven otherwise. And does it, you know that he's had the door slammed in his face a few times. There's no question about it, just about everything I have. That has occurred, that he wanted to get a deal or two done, may have been seven or eight, who knows, over the years. But you know some deals just didn't go down when he thought he had a deal down. So then you adjust, and that's what he's doing here. In flux. The roster is a little bit in flux. But is that the way of baseball, or is that the way of the Brewers? Is that the way of the payroll, economic structure? Is that the market? It's a number of things. So you get guys like Jimmy Nelson, who just signed a one-year deal, a couple of million. It could balloon. He's got major incentives as he signs with the Dodgers. I mean, heavy incentives. And that's about maybe what the Brewers should have offered, but they went in a different direction, and Jimmy Nelson was a guy that was deemed expendable and not a guy that he was going to decide to hang on to. So Jimmy Nelson signs with the Dodgers, as we go over a couple of notes here before we talk about the Cincinnati Reds. And in my world, everybody is, it's Cub territory as well. But they're really, really concerned about the Cincinnati Reds. And you talk about the trajectory. At some point, guys, the Reds are going to have a breakout season. And so will it be a three-team race, a four-team race? You've got St. Louis in there. They're always going to be there. That's going to be interesting in the Central. We'll talk about the Cincinnati Reds in just a second here. Eric Thames, we talked to Adam McAlvey last hour. He said that's the one surprise for him, that the Brewers did not work out a one-year deal with him. He thought maybe it was a money situation. He signs a one-year, $4 million deal with the Washington Nationals. He's going to platoon over there. It's $3 million for the contract this year, and then it's a $1 million buyout for year two with a team option. So he's guaranteed $4 million on this effort. So you have guys like that just exiting. Long time. I shouldn't say long time Brewers, but Brewers names that we've come to expect success with, at least through this current window of high-end success. And that is NLCS, back to the playoffs, back-to-back years, 17 you competed. And guys like Travis Shaw, no longer with the organization. Eric Thames, and certainly the last couple of years, year and a half or so, Mike Moustakas, a fan favorite, no doubt. And Yasmani Grandal, who just resurrected a lot of money in his life with the deal he signed with the Chicago White Sox, using the Brewers, and I don't say this in a bad way, but using the Brewers as the stepping stone. And I think they sort of knew they couldn't afford Yasmani Grandal if he had a bust-out year. So Yasmani Grandal is gone. Kind of mainstays the last few years, Zach Davies and Chase Anderson in the rotation. I mean, these are, when it comes to Brewers baseball the last few years, these are household names. These are T-shirt jerseys walking around. Because you couldn't afford the stitched ones, you had to get the T-shirt jersey. I don't even know how much they are. Austin, you know how much those are at the fan shop?
Those are probably at least $150.
No, well, the stitched ones, yeah. Yeah, the good ones. But the T-shirts are, I don't know, $35 or so?
Yeah, I'd say probably about $30-$35.
Yeah. But Chase Anderson T-shirt jerseys running around. Zach Davies no longer with the team. It's crazy. Jeremy Jeffress was released, you know, prior to the end of the season. But, I mean, these are the names. This is a really, really interesting upcoming season for the Brewers. It is. And not only that, you've got teams getting better in the Central. You've got St. Louis, who is always decent. You've got the Cincinnati Reds. I don't think anybody can say that the Cincinnati Reds are not getting better. No question they're getting better. How much better? We'll find out. We'll talk to Mo Egger in just a couple of minutes here. Covers the Cincinnati Reds. I've chatted with him a couple of times on and off over the years on this show and as well as the Bill Michaels show. But going to be interesting. Before the break here, again, as I stated last hour, at the top of the list, what I'm looking forward to is seeing Keston Hira for a full season with that bat. He's got a chance, guys. There's every indication that he's going to be one of the best pure hitters in the game. He's adjusted to today's form of hitting. Launch angle and bat-to-ball skills are just amazing for him. I know there's a guy that could win a batting title. He is, and I don't think too many in the industry would argue with that. What are you looking forward to most for this season? Austin, let me ask you before the break.
I'm with you. I'm looking forward to seeing Kesson Hero with a full season's worth of at-bats. I was pretty disappointed when they sent him back down last year in favor of Travis Shaw to come back up. So seeing him with a full season of at-bats, batting either in front or behind of Christian Yelich.
Other interesting note would be I'm looking forward to seeing how Lorenzo Cain bounces back.
Mm-hmm.
Because I'm still convinced he was fighting through some injuries there, and I'm a little surprised he didn't have a little surgery done, honestly. I thought he would. I haven't read that he has. But I'm interested in seeing Lorenzo Cain bounce back. Christian Yelich, what are you going to – I mean, it's like watching Giannis. I mean, you keep saying he's peaked, and then he just continues to get better. So I guess that would be significant and something to look forward to see how much better Christian Yelich can be. He's still a couple of years away from he's not even 30 yet. I mean, that's a guy who still can get better. The platoon situation at first base, very interesting. Justin Smoak, Ryan Braun in the mix over there. Who knows? Ryan Healy may make this squad as a third baseman if they can't get something done. Eric Sogard, does he turn into the 2017 and 2019 Eric Sogard or the 2018 Eric Sogard? Luis Urias, who comes highly regarded. Looking at his numbers in the minor leagues, they acquired him in the Zach Davies, Eric Lauer trade. Seeing how he's going to play out. Does he oust Orlando Arcia? There's a lot of storylines here. The biggest of which, I think we can all agree, is roster turnover. Exiting and entering for the 2020 championship season. Yeah, we'll talk more. Let's talk NL Central and the Cincinnati Reds next here on Hot Stove Weekly. Hey, welcome back, guys. Talking Brewers baseball, your off-season fix. More Packers and Seahawks conversation tomorrow morning as the Fan has it covered. Chuck and Winkler tomorrow morning, Bill Michaels, and the Wendy's Big Show in the afternoon. But each and every Tuesday night, take a little break and talk about the upcoming 2020 championship season for the Brewers. However, some teams in the Central, I think, would have something to say about that. St. Louis, Chicago, Pittsburgh, maybe in a time frame of flux a little bit. However, the Cincinnati Reds, and they're the ones, the outliers that at some point, whether it's here in 2020 or 2021, they are going to have a breakout season. There's no doubt in my mind they will. And they're putting some things together. It appears they have a ton of money to spend also. Here to talk about the Central and the Cincinnati Reds from ESPN 1530 in Cincinnati, Mo Egger. Mo, nice to have you on again. We've talked a couple of times over the years.
We have. In fact, I was in Chicago about 3 weeks ago for a University of Cincinnati basketball game. I scored tickets to see the Bucks and the Lakers, and on the ride back, I thoroughly enjoyed listening to you talk about that game.
Thank you very much. I appreciate that, indeed. But let's get to your Cincinnati Reds here. What the hell is going on? We don't need another. We already have the Cubs and Cardinals to go after. Now you've got the Brewers, Cardinals, and Cubs, but it's a good team.
Yeah, number one, they were awful from 2014 through 2018. They were slightly better than awful last year. I think, number one, you get to a point where if you're going to start a rebuild, which they did in 2015, eventually the rebuild has to end. And I think that has happened. I think they have a pretty nice core, a pretty solid starting rotation, a decent everyday lineup. I still think they could really use a bat, an upgrade, somewhere in the everyday eight. And I think therein lies the question. The rebuild is done. Now it's about adding on to what they have. And in order to, become contenders in a division that I think to a large degree is as wide open, certainly for a team like the Reds, as it's been in quite a while. They've had a productive offseason. You guys certainly know what Mike Moustakas can do. It's going to be interesting to see him play second base. They've added an arm in Wade Miley, which really gives them a deep starting rotation. And they finally joined the 21st century and signed a player from Asia in this guy by the name of Shogo Akiyama, who they made official last night, who's a guy who can play, you know, all three outfield positions, primarily center field, but he's really good at getting on base. At least he was in Japan. So, you know, you add that to what they have, there's some optimism here. I still think they need a piece, and I think, you know, the main storyline, you know, between now and the beginning of spring training is, do they go get one more piece and really put themselves in the conversation as a contender in this division?
Yeah, and I think that piece may be a higher buck pitcher. I really, the offense scares me. Despite Joey Votto not being Joey Votto like last year, I don't know what was going on there, but with Suarez and now Moustakas and Votto and Aquino, and boy, you guys are going to hit.
Yeah, they, you know, they can. I think the outfield is a little bit of a question mark, just from the standpoint of, you know, if you look at what they have right now, we're probably talking about a platoon situation in left field. We're probably talking about Shogo Akiyama in center, and we're probably talking about Aristides Aquino in right. So there's two things about that. Number one, where does it put Nick Senzel, who was the team's, you know, the second overall pick in the draft in 2016? They did the whole service time game with him last year, so they brought him up in May. The results were okay, not great, but, you know, for a rookie, you're willing to take okay. Right now, he's kind of a guy, you know, without a position. Where do you put him? Do you put him back in the infield? They spent an entire year trying to teach him how to play center. It would seem to me that the plan is going to be to play Shogo Akiyama in center. And if you do that, you know, okay, but Aristides Aquino has had one good month in the major leagues. Now, it was a historically great month, but he's not going to hit 15 homers every single month, which is what he did last August, and he turned into a pumpkin last September. Shogo Akiyama, you certainly love the numbers that he put up in Japan. How much of a learning curve is there to playing in the United States with a different baseball? And the platoon that I think they want to use with guys in left field, Jesse Winker and Philip Ervin, neither of those guys have gotten through a full big league season. So there's a lot of potential there. But you're asking some guys to make, you know, some pretty significant leaps. And the Joey Votto thing is not insignificant either. Number one, you know, 2018 was a down year for him. He still led the league in on-base percentage, but from a pure productivity standpoint, statistically, 2 years ago was a down year. The thought was he'll bounce back. Well, he didn't. His numbers last year were the worst of his career across an entire season. He is 36 years old. You know, you kind of wonder, okay, even if he's not as bad as he was last year, is he ever going to be Joey Votto again? And this team probably needs him to be Joey Votto again. So, yeah, I'm with you in that when you look at the potential of this team, there's a lot to like. There are some significant question marks, however.
I just wonder if the age thing is going to catch up with, or is catching up with Joey Votto. I mean, I don't know if we should have the Tom Brady, Drew Brees conversation, but age is age, man. And eventually your skills start to diminish a little bit.
Yeah. I've always thought that Joey Votto, you know, I even wrote a piece maybe 3 years ago, and it was about, you know, here's why Joey Votto can get to Cooperstown one day. And it was based on two things. One, younger voters value what Joey Votto does well more than ever, which is get on base. Number two, his overall skill set should age well, which is, you know, hitting the ball to all fields, working counts, being patient, being really studious. And while I think all that is still true, it's been funny. And I've even said to people to really kind of grasp what's happened with Joey Votto over the last 2 years, you could obviously look at the numbers and draw the conclusion, wow, age has caught up to him. But you really have had to have watched him, A, when he was at his best. Mm-hmm. And, you know, from 2010 through 2017, there weren't many hitters better than Joey Votto. But if you watched him then and you've watched him the last 2 years, you're watching a guy who's constantly tinkering with his swing, constantly looking uncomfortable in the batter's box. One at-bat, he'll be choking up by about 5 inches. The next at-bat, he's holding the bat down by the barrel. One at bat, he's crouched down low like Pete Rose. The next at bat, he's standing up straight like Daryl Strawberry. I mean, it's really weird. So you're watching a guy in real time who I think is I don't like the word lost, but he looks like he's trying to come up with solutions on the fly, and he really hasn't been able to come up with them. So I think it's going to be interesting when the season begins to just see what that looks like, see if he has found his swing, and then obviously see if the production is there. And the other thing you got to remember about him, number one, he's making $25 million a year. Number two, he would be able to say no to any trade. Number three, they're stuck with him for 4 years. So this isn't you try to get something from him in 2020 and then you move on. He's here for a while. You get four more years of this. And so I think it's a good question. How do you build a team and try to win with a guy who you probably can't trade, probably not going to bench, and is getting older and whose skills are declining? I think those are very, very fair questions, not just about this season, but moving forward.
Has he been, again, we're talking with Mo Egger from ESPN 1530 in Cincinnati. Is he liked by the fan base? Obviously, they like his production for sure, and I get that. I had a little run-in with him, and I'm not a big fan of his personally. Just because of the way he handled the situation. I mean, to me, can I give my honest opinion?
Yeah,
this is just my opinion, and I think I'm fair to say this. My experience, that dude's a little strange. I mean, radio guys are strange too, so I'm not exempt by this. But he is a little strange. Does the fan base like him? Is he good with the fans?
He's good with the fans. I mean, I've heard. I've not heard a story that I can recall of him having a negative interaction with a fan. In fact, I know for a fact some of the things that he's done for kids and things like that that,
sure.
that go underreported because he doesn't want them to be talked about. He's a different guy. I mean, especially by ballplayer standards. Now, some of that's good because if you interview Joey Votto, he's going to give you a thoughtful answer. He's going to give you a drawn-out answer. He's willing to talk about his struggles. He's willing to talk about the process of finding his swing and what he's looking for when he's in the batter's box. So some of that is really good. He's not one of those guys that when you put a microphone in front of him, he's going to spout off a bunch of cliches. Some of that is good, but mm-hmm. yeah, he's a little bit of a different guy. And quite frankly, I've heard former teammates of his say, just not somebody that you could ever really connect to and that connect with. And that doesn't mean he's a bad teammate.
Sure.
But yeah, he's different. He's weird. the people who cover the team on a day in and day out basis here certainly don't report having any difficulties with him.
Okay.
But I think they would all say that he is wired a little bit differently. And I think some fans have really failed to connect with him because of that. There's not many ball players. When there's a newspaper feature done on them, talks about going to art museums on the road. There's yeah. that level that, Joe fan sitting in the upper deck really can't connect with. And again, that certainly doesn't make Joey a bad guy, but it makes him different. And I do think there's a little bit of this is a town where Pete Rose, for better or for worse, is still revered.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know that Pete Rose has ever read a book in his life. He is as hard scrabble as they get. Joey Votto is the exact opposite. And in this town, people are always going to identify with these hard-nosed, gritty, gutsy, dirt on your uniform, sort of blue-collar guys. And for as good as Joey Votto has been, I don't think anybody would look at Joey and go, boy, there's a blue-collar guy.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I get it. Hey, final thing for you. We'll bring it back home here. I have some experience with, obviously, you mentioned Wade Miley. Started out good last year and then really, really kind of tailed off. However, he's back with Derek Johnson, who really has done a great job and did a great job here. That's a gold star for the Cincinnati Reds to get that pitching coach. He's highly regarded here in these parts. And your thoughts on the regime in there, the coaching staff, David Bell, and certainly the pitching coach of Derek Johnson.
The Baseball America named Derek Johnson the coach of the year. And mm-hmm. If you talk to any of the pitchers, primarily Sonny Gray, the Reds traded for Sonny Gray last offseason, then gave him a 3-year contract. And the reason was Derek Johnson. He had pitched for him at Vanderbilt. And I had Sonny Gray on my show maybe about a month or so ago, and he had an all-star year last year, and he gave full credit to Derek Johnson. And I think he is really, really, really helped that staff. I know Trevor Bauer is excited to work with him. And so when they announced the Wade Miley move, I think that's the first place most of our heads went to, which was, all right, Derek Johnson's done it before here. We've seen it. The pitchers swear by him. You know, let's see if he can help Wade Miley recapture the magic. I think David Bell's a bit of a wild card. I don't think he did a bad job last year. But I certainly would like to think that you'll see him, you know, learn from some things that didn't quite go so well last year. The first half of the year, it felt like he had no idea how to handle a pitching staff. And then I think in large part because of that, the bullpen fell apart and it felt like they were swimming upstream in the second half of the season. I think because they have so many, you know, veteran starters, you can allow those guys to go deeper into games. It felt like David Bell, even in a day and age where pitchers aren't going as deep into games, it felt like he was way too quick with a hook. And so I think that's going to have to change. But the guys seem to like playing for him. He got kicked out of a ton of games last year, so you can use that for whatever you want. But, yeah, I think it's going to be interesting to see, you know, maybe how he handles certain situations in year two as opposed to year one.
You know what, Mo? I didn't know this, but you are the president of the Jumbo Diaz fan club. I never knew that about you. I appreciate it, Mo. If you need something, let me know, certainly, okay?
All right, we'll talk close to the season. I look forward to it.
You got it. There he is, Mo Egger from ESPN 1530 in Cincinnati, talking NL Central and Cincinnati Reds baseball here on Hot Stove. He joins us on the Great Midwest Bank Hotline.
Looking to buy, build, renovate, or refinance in 2020? Look no further and call Great Midwest Bank today. Great Midwest Bank, providing simply local common sense lending to your community since 1935.
He's had his hands full talking Packers football, but we finally get to connect here and talk some Brewers baseball. What does Chuck Freeman think about the Brewers and the turnover and the new names and the exits that have happened? Talk with Chuck next to your Hot Stove Weekly on The Fan. I cannot tell you how much I miss this, man. I do. I miss it a lot, talking Brewers baseball with you guys. The 2020 championship season is upon us. Tim Allen talking Brewers here on Hot Stove Weekly. This is every Tuesday, 6 until 8 o'clock. And we bring in Chuck Freeman, who, Chuck, I know you got your hands full, and rightly so, with the Packers and Seahawks going at it on Sunday. But
man, and Bart in the morning.
That's true.
He's a handful himself.
Yeah, he is the handful. But this gives you a little recess period to kind of talk about something that you and I can definitely see eye to eye on, and that's the love of Brewers baseball, man. But I will say this. The list of players that left and the list of players in, we haven't experienced this in a few years.
No, and, you know, part of me, I mean, I kind of really like the players in these last two teams, these last 2 years. And a little bit of me dies when I hear Eric Thames signs a one-year contract with Washington,
yeah,
who the Brewers' season ended against. You know, I mean, stuff like that. And when, you know, bit by bit, day by day, you know, we were losing guys. And, you know, it's like, you look at the Brewer roster right now, it's like, I mean, facetiously, you're like, who are these guys? But it's all going to come together, I hope.
Yeah, no, from the fans' perspective, and you know about as much as anybody about Brewers baseball, that It's summertime, it's June, it's July, it's fair and festival. Let's say, grab some tickets, you pick them up from work, or you grab them online, whatever. You go have a few beers. I think it's going to be a learning curve early on to introduce the fan base to really what is 50% new roster.
It kind of reminds me of that old Abbott Costello, who's on first, you know?
Yeah.
Who's on first, who's going to play second? You know, you don't know. And it really is. We're going to have to, you know, we've known some of these players. You know, do we follow Justin Smoke's career as much as, you know, our own guys? Obviously not. Do we watch the national Sunday night game as much as maybe watch Sunday night football? Probably not. But still, you know, these are guys we all got to get to learn here over the next couple of months. And I still don't think the roster is complete just yet, Tim. I don't think the roster is complete. I'm not going to write off the season, but I'm telling you, like, if you look at the roster right now, you can't look at it and just be, you can't get as excited. I can't get as excited about this roster as I had the last two seasons. I'll tell you that.
Well, no, I get it. Grandal and Moustakas, along with Yelich and Kane, and I understand that. However, I asked Adam McKelvey last hour about this, and he said it's sort of this turnover thing is sort of a trend in baseball. We'd all love the plug and play lineup and the roster, and he bats second, third, fourth, fifth, and on down the line. I don't know if that's the case or not. Do you think it's a trend in baseball that the roster is going to turn over like a bullpen used to turn over?
Or like how football turns over. I mean, all of a sudden in football, you're watching these playoffs and you're like, boy, I didn't know that guy was on that team. You know, I thought he was with this team. It's just, you know, there's so much turnover in football from year to year. Guys get cut, guys with a team 2 years, and then you can't get used to him because he's with a different team. Baseball, I think we've always learned, you know, I mean, we've always liked the fact that, you know, there's longevity. You know, a player is drafted by a team and he makes the major league team, he's up there for at least 6 years and then possibly more if he signs that extension. So, it seems to be a trend. I guess, you know, Council says he's not surprised at all the turnover, but it's still a little bit of a sticker shock when you see it, when it actually happens.
It is, and it's going to take some getting used to for sure. I said that one of the things I look most forward to this upcoming season is, you know, from a baseball standpoint, is seeing Keston Hira for a full season, Chuck. 550 mm-hmm. so at-bats, and seeing him just planted in that two or three hole and just doing his thing. What are you looking most forward to?
You know, I you know, the arbitration case with Josh Hader here in the offseason, for one. You know, that's another thing here in the offseason that's got to play out. But, you know, how they're going to fill that third base spot. You know, how you know, Lorenzo Cain, you know, I think we saw signs of him aging last year. You know, how is he going to be for another year? Because we got a few years left in that contract with him. You know, I did Ryan Braun, another year close to retirement. How is he going to be in possibly his final season as a Brewer? You know, Yelich, you know, can he top what he did the last 2 years? I mean, I didn't know he could equal what he did the previous year, mm-hmm. but man, he had another MVP season, a great, great year that unfortunately was ended with injury. But, you know, how are they going to replace? I mean, I think that, you know, replacing Tim, the production they got at third base from Moustakas and a catcher from Yasmani Grandal, how do you lose two all-star players like that and replace them? Those are tough losses for a team that made the wild card last year.
Well, they are, and if you look at it's a little more than just taking a look at the home runs and RBIs. How do you replace this? So you look at on-base percentage, you look at defensive run save, you look at chemistry. That might be a biggest concern of mine, might be the chemistry, because you can't predict that, and Craig Council knows that. Hey, you got to be great teammates. You guys got to get along. You got to support each other, play for each other. Sometimes you do a big-time clearance sale and a roster turnover. Sometimes you can't just automatically recapture that, Chuck.
No, and I think there was, you know, a few things special with this team, and I think Moustakas really was a really good glue guy for this team, you know. And who's going to be the leader on this team? I mean, I think there is such thing. I think it is important to have a clubhouse leader. You know, that's not everything, but, you know, you need to have a clubhouse leader. Who's going to assume that role? I think, you know, a lot of the guys they lost each had their own specific role. I think, you know, Thames had his own little role on this team, and so many guys did. Moustakas did, as I mentioned, and Grandal. I think there's going to be a new chemistry, and, you know, I think that's a mystery. We don't know how that's going to form.
Yeah.
Or if it's going to form.
Yeah, we're not sure. I mean, guys rallying around a pitcher like Jimmy Nelson that was struggling on the field and they wanted to demote. I mean, those sorts of things, there's no Zach Davies. There's no Chase Anderson. On the other hand, Avisail Garcia, Omar Nevarez, these are two guys that I think Brewers fans will grow to love. They're good ball players.
Sure. Just not household names yet. Yeah. But they could become household names. And you know, yeah, I think both guys have, you know, Nevarez, I think, you know, not only potential, but I mean, I think he can be a 30 home run hitter, a home run guy at Miller Park. You know, I think you really can. I think this team has got, you know, some potential on paper. It's unfortunate because I thought last year, not only they had potential, but we knew going into the season, barring injury, that team was going to compete for a division championship and at least a postseason spot. And, you know, they had to fight like heck in September to do so. But this team right now as it stands, I can't tell you how good they're going to be or how bad they're going to be, Tim. I just don't know because we're just kind of mixing in a bunch of players here. It's like an expansion franchise. And I don't want to take it to that level, but, you know, when you get an expansion franchise, you can buy a bunch of players you don't know. And
right.
We're combining a bunch of different players here on this team, and it's like, man, it's a makeover that I didn't expect to happen.
No, what the fans are going to look at, and I think a lot of our listeners, your listeners in the morning, they look at money, and it's okay. I think it's all right. At times, it's pertinent to the conversation. We look at money here for the organization, $125 million payroll last year, the record amount in their history. And as we sit today, Chuck, here on, what, January 6th, 7th, it's at $85 million. Yet they're clearing out 2.5 sections for a new deck at Miller Park. They sink $60 million in American Family Fields of Phoenix, formerly Maryvale. Is that going to be an issue with the fan base when they start connecting dots if the payroll stays here at 85 or 90 million?
I would be stunned if it stayed at 85 or 90 million, Tim. I mean, that just is a bad message to send to your fan base when you just cipher off that money, that much salary off what you'd had from a year ago when you were in the postseason and like three outs away possibly from going to the postseason or going further in the postseason. So, I think it would be great if they made a trade for Arenado. God, would that perk up the Brewer Nation?
Oh, man.
I don't see that ever happening. I mean, you know, you hear rumors that he's on the trade block, but wouldn't that be something? But I would love to fill that $30 or $40 million in that salary block there with a guy like that. But
what, Todd Frazier doesn't do it to you?
No. No, I mean, not like an MVP candidate. You have two MVP candidates on this team.
Oh, yeah.
With Arenado and Christian Yelich, two guys who are consistently great players. God, if they got, I mean, again, that's not happening, but if they had a guy like that in this roster, and in addition to all the other moves they made this season, now you got something. Now you got something you really sink your teeth into.
Would it make you feel better, or would it make the naysayers on the finances feel better? If this was in an effort to sign a huge deal with Christian Yelich?
No, because I don't think what people want to see, and I don't want to see this, is, you know, let's say you sign Christian Yelich to a contract and then, you know, extension, but then the rest of your team is bad. And then we're going through the mid-80s where the Brewers had Molitor and Yount, but then didn't have anything else. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they were winning 75 games a year, maybe. I don't want that. I mean, if it came down to keeping Christian Yelich and being a bad team or trading Christian Yelich and having more players and competing, obviously you would trade him, but I want to do both. I want to keep him and, you know, just build around him. It's, you know, here's what the unfortunate thing about this too. We haven't touched on the minor league system. The Brewers, it would, you know, if they were making all these moves and he had some resources down the corner, but they have nothing in the minor leagues, nothing at all.
Yeah, they're not ranked very highly, and they have only one in the top 100, maybe two. It's not a great situation. I wonder, you know, the Washington Nationals won the World Series, and I was reading up on these guys yesterday. I wonder if analytics, Chuck, and I know we're a little bit older school guys, but I have adapted to some of the analytical information. The Washington Nationals, did you realize they have 10 of their scouts that are over 60 years old, none of which are from Harvard, Yale, or MIT?
They're just good old baseball guys.
Yeah, they are old curmudgeon baseball dudes, and I wonder if there's sort of a balance that we got to kind of readdress here. Instead of all leaning toward the analytics, just kind of lean back over to say maybe more of the eye test.
Yeah, I would love that. You know, I think, you know, sure. If they want to put some analytics into this, that's great. Okay, that's fine. But what's wrong with going out and scouting? And, you know, I think that, you know, the Brewers and teams forever have employed so many scouts all over the world, all over the country. And that's not, you know, we're going away from that. except for the Nationals, you know, and the Nationals won a World Series by doing this, you know. And I still think, you know, scouting an eye test is plays an important part. You know, Billy Bean kind of just changed all this, you know, this whole, yeah. you know, money ball thing. That kind of put baseball in a whole new direction, and people saw, well, geez, you have to spend a lot of money to win some baseball games. So,
well, and it doesn't take a great scout to say Scherzer, Strasburg, and Corbin. Yeah, we'll fire these guys in a three-game set. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. You know, I think in analytics, there's something to be said about analytics. And you hear that Mike McCarthy, you know, down with the Cowboys is coming around to analytics and that won him the job in Dallas. And, you know, analytics definitely does got to be a play a part of the game. But still, you know, old-fashioned, the eye test always plays a part, too. It should play a part.
Yeah, and we'll be keeping our eyes on you guys, Chuck and Winkler, talking Brewers baseball later on this summer. Right now, they're hands full with Packers Seahawks. But, Chuck, look forward to talking more Brewers baseball with you. 2020 is upon us.
Absolutely. Anytime, Tim.
All right, there he is, Chuck Freeman. Catch him tomorrow morning with Bart Winkler, Chuck and Winkler. Also, Bill Michaels in the Wendy's Big Show tomorrow talking some Packers football. In the meantime, it's just a little escape from the football scene to talk about your Milwaukee Brewers. It's called Hot Stove Weekly. It's this and every Tuesday here on The Fan. Couple of minutes, Hot Stove Weekly, talking Brewers baseball. Tim Allen on the radio, and we'll make some time for you guys next week at 6 o'clock. Remember, Brewers on Deck event is coming up in just a couple of weeks here, and then you know it's getting a little bit closer and closer to opening day. March 26th is the mark here. Because that is the earliest Major League Baseball has ever started. And everybody's going to play on March 26th. The Brewers find themselves on Sunday Night Baseball a minimum of three times this year. They only released the first 6 or 7 weeks of that schedule. But they're going to open up the first Sunday night game is going to be the Brewers. They're finally reaping some of the benefits of being a competitive team. So it's starting to creep up on us. I didn't get a chance to read the list in full of the key components of additions, and I'll leave you with that. Been mainly focused tonight on some of the players that are no longer on the team. But these are the guys here that you're going to have to get used to for the most part. And I agree with Chuck Freeman. A lot of folks, Adam McAlvey from MLB.com believes that the roster is not complete yet. And I would agree with that. There's going to be some additional changes here. January's always been a transaction sort of month. These players are the ones that you're going to have to get used to. Omar Navarez, Luis Urias, Brett Anderson, Eric Lauer, Josh Lindblom, Justin Smoke, Eric Sogard, again, Eric Yardley, Ronnie Rodriguez, Angel Perdomo, Ryan Healy, Mark Mathias, Avisail Garcia, J.P. Fireisen. Oh, by the way, Keon Broxton is still in the organization. I would be stunned if he breaks camp with the club. That's going to do it for this edition of Hot Stove Weekly. Austin, Texas has been with us, Sam Schmitz as well. So you're looking forward to Keston Hira and... how about a couple of beers, a brat, and an open roof at Miller Park? Can't come soon enough, although this winter has not been all that bad. You guys have a great night. Remember, Packers and Seahawks conversation tomorrow morning. Chuck and Winkler talking about it. Bill Michaels, same deal. Wendy's Big Show. And Leroy Butler, wish him well on his, soon-to-be Hall of Fame. I've got my fingers crossed for that. You guys have a great night. Remember, smile, Milwaukee. The world will smile back.
we really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.